Welcome to the podcast, Claim Your Excellent Life, with your host, Suzanne Kellner-Zink, where she helps professional women learn how to be happy. Suzanne will teach you how to do this through building high self-esteem, relaxation and calm, and good, healthy relationships. Tune in every week as Suzanne shares effective strategies to help you claim your excellent life with happiness techniques, self-esteem building exercises, relationship tips, and relaxation information. Make sure to head over to dawningvisions.com to subscribe to the newsletter to receive your keys to happiness, as well as other useful free gifts for you.
In this episode of Create Your Excellent Life, we're going to be speaking of something super important, known as the importance of letting people know they matter. You know, when I was just a year or so out of college, I got a call at about 11 p.m. from my mother telling me that I had to hurry up and get home because my father had a stroke on the square dance floor about an hour and a half away from where they lived down in Long Island. And that the whole family was there, including my grandmother, had come up from Florida. And for whatever reason, I was the last person she had called. And the one thing that I realized at that moment in time, at 23 and a half years old, and my father being merely just turned 61 2 months prior, was that we really don't know how long people are going to be in our lives. We really don't. It was a shock to me to find out that my dad had a stroke and that literally 2 days later after I arrived back home and we took the drive down to Long Island 2 days in a row, that the doctor came in and told the family that he was brain dead and that we needed to follow his directive to allow him a peaceful death, which luckily my mother allowed, knowing that my father was a person who came out of the slums and became a dentist and had a fabulous practice and a very fulfilling life and basically did what he wanted for his life. And those of us who got the lesson learned and those of us who didn't. And that this was the only right thing to do. And I was really proud of her because my mother is not known to be a very emotionally stable person. However, whenever crises come up for other people, she knows how to use her intellect to do the right thing. Now, the thing about this that was very, very important to me was the fact that several years ago, one of my older sisters, she's 5 years older than me, living in Florida at the time, had gotten to know my dad as an adult, meaning she being an adult. And she had strongly suggested that I get to know my father as the adult I now was as a college grad because he's a really cool guy. He has a lot of things to share. And he's funny. And all of these were true, and I knew they were true because I had worked in his dental office for 4 years, which is how I got to know him. In fact, it was in those 4 years that I asked him many questions about himself, his philosophy of life, and he shared with me how he built the business and why he did things the way that he did things, and just different things that were very important. And you can find out most of those learnings, actually, in my book, Learning from My Journey, Suzannisms for the Mind and Soul. Because those things that he taught me, I use with many, many of my clients to help reframe the way that they think of things, give them new perspectives. He was full of wisdom, because of all the hardships he overcame to meet his goal. But most of all, what I was happiest about was the fact that I always let the man know that I loved him, I respected him, that I very much wanted his insights, his wisdom, his knowledge, and that in 99.9% of the cases where he would give me some bit of information based on his life's learnings, I would follow through. I think one of the hardest things he ever had to do with me was to let me know in a very loving way by taking me out to breakfast, a very casual place actually, and ask me what I loved about my fiancé, the guy that I had gotten engaged to while I was in college. And I went and I gave him some ideas as to why I thought I loved him. And he very lovingly pointed out some of his, well, I guess the best way to put it would be, he had some ideas of how this future husband of mine, if I went through with it, was not really in integrity, and that he had concerns about things that he had seen in his personality, like some manipulative things that he would do. And he demonstrated these things to me at that time and really gave me some food for thought in a very loving way. Now, he took a risk by even talking to me about this, because I can tell you years later, when my sister-in-law, from a different guy, I actually did disengage myself from that guy based on my father's input, and I had gotten engaged to another guy after I graduated college, a couple years later, after my dad passed, actually, was when I met him. And I can remember when we were having a conversation, my then husband and his parents, about their concerns about their daughter, my sister-in-law, and who she was going to marry. Because my in-laws knew a lot about this man, because my then father-in-law and this guy hung out a lot at the same bar. And people in bars talk, and they talk about the people they hang out with at the bar and in the community. And so I suggested to them, by telling them the story of how my dad had opened up to me with his concern about the gentleman I was really intent on marrying from college, as not really being a good match for a lot of different reasons, and that it was their job as parents to point this out to her so she could make a good decision for herself. Because frankly, if they didn't tell her anything, she wouldn't have any new information. If they did tell her, then at least she could take it under advisement and make perhaps a better decision for herself. And as it turned out, my mother-in-law took out a $10,000 loan to pay for this really fancy wedding for the two of them, and they never had the chat with her. And this guy ended up going in and out of jail several times. The last time, I don't know what it was for, but his daughter didn't see him from the age of 7 on. Now, my sister-in-law did get divorced from him, and she did get remarried to a guy who really was a very good person for her daughter, and I guess for her. I mean, I don't really know them that well, frankly. But the point of the matter is that they never took the advisement to talk to their daughter and take that risk, that even if she might be a little upset with what they had to say, they were doing it out of love and concern, because that is how one demonstrates love and concern, especially as a parent. Your kids do not need to necessarily like you every moment of the day. There will be times when they hate you. And that's okay, because they still love you unconditionally. So long as you come about this coming from your heart with care and concern for the right spiritual reasons, for the goodness of everybody concerned, especially the person with whom you're talking, your child. Well, getting back to letting those people you know that you care about them, this is like really super important, because we don't know how long these people have on this planet. We really don't. I never thought my father would be dead at the age of 61. He was always playing tennis, squash. He was out there, or racquetball rather. He liked racquetball a lot toward the end of his life. He loved golfing so long as he could walk the course, because that was his exercise during those months when he could golf. He was fabulous at tennising. That's what he called playing tennis, tennising. In the wintertime, he had 3 games going at 3 different tennis clubs in the area. I mean, the man was really active. And yet, he still had a stroke and died, just like that. So, what do you need to know? What do you need to understand? What do you need to get to realize that the people who are in your life may not be in your life forever? I have another story I want to give you at this point, with the people who are very, very close to me right now, which I'm working on at the moment, I have this friend of mine that I've known for 35 years. He and I were very, very close all through college, like really from the first class we took together in an education course, because we both studied elementary ed with moderate special needs. And years later, after he got married, he really wanted to have a family. And so they had this first child of theirs who was a little boy. This little boy's named Benjamin. And Benjamin had gone through some very difficult times in his life. First of all, when he was about, I don't know, maybe 2 years old or so, his mother had to have a surgery on her hip, and it was large enough that she was in a body cast, so he couldn't really have physical contact with her at that time because her whole body was in a body cast. At that time, Richard had found me and my then husband an apartment really close to where they were living at the time. And because I was dealing with all my manic depressive stuff, I wasn't working at the time. So I had a lot of time, and I was kind of depressed a lot at that time. So I'd go down to their apartment, and I would hang out with Benjamin and take him out swimming. He didn't really like swimming, but he liked running around the pool at that time and playing catch with me, throwing the ball to me in the pool and stuff like that. And we'd go down and get his Reese's peanut butter cups at the pharmacy nearby. He remembers all this, by the way, even to this day. He's now 25. But there came a time when he was like 7 or 8 years old when he was really, really active. And he had a really hard time just sitting still. And Richard, although he himself can be excitable and is very, very high energy, he goes and goes and goes until he can't go anymore, and then he just crashes for the night, basically out of energy. His son is very much like him. But he couldn't handle his son's energy. It was just too much. And so over the years, he'd be really hard on his son because he would just lose patience with him. I mean, people do lose patience with people, you know. It happens. And especially those people who you're very close to. So I'm not really faulting Richard for this, but what I am saying is that in relationships, sometimes things happen that make things a little difficult between people who otherwise really care and love each other. And then later on, there was a time when there were major problems going on with the wife. She's epileptic, and she was having a lot of seizures, and she was very moody, and Richard was trying to earn money, and so he was working full-time at his day job, doing basically social work with developmentally disabled people, some with mental illness as well. And then he had a night job working at a discount store that was basically really dusty with a concrete floor that really bothered his legs, but the extra money paid for the groceries in his eyes. But it was also a way for him to legitimately be away from the household. And as he was away from the household, his 14-year-old son was really in control of taking care of his mom, who would have epileptic seizures, fall against the doorway, really, and then sometimes her head would get injured and there would be blood spewing all over. And it was really a lot for him to handle, and yet he had to handle it because who else was there to handle it? He just knew that he had to call 911, get the ambulance, and get her taken care of. And then he called his dad, or maybe his sister called his dad. And this became really too much for this kid to handle. Well, Benjamin and I have been really, really close ever since those days when he was 2 years old and I was there with him several times a week, actually. We bonded really tight. And he let me know over the years, because I did a lot of hypnotism with him over the years to help him to know what he wanted to do with his life and to let go of certain things that were bothering him. And so I knew the history. And the thing that's really fascinating to me at this point now is that all he really wants for his life, because he has a great career path, he knows what he wants. He's always known what he wanted. Well, since he was like 10 years old and I did the first hypnotism with him, he knew he didn't want to be working two jobs. He knew he wanted a really good paying job, a family and a sailboat, and a nice house, and that he would be able to do whatever he needed to do to make those things happen. And yeah, he's had a lot of challenges along the way, and he's making it happen anyway. Well, I was over at his father's house because Benjamin had really asked me to have a conversation for him with his father, and I did this. And the thing that he wanted me to do was he wanted me to let his father know, in no uncertain terms, that he really wanted to build a better relationship with him because Benjamin has been having a really hard time with his dad trusting him, because it seems like every time Benjamin does something really positive, his father undermines it or finds some way to sabotage it. Or at least that's the way it feels to Benjamin. And frankly, that's all that it needs to feel to Benjamin to make it not good. So anytime someone tells you that you're making them feel one way or another, or anytime you're around someone and they're making you feel something you don't want to feel, you need to let them know what it is and what they need to rectify it. Or if they're doing something great and they make you feel good, by all means, let them know. This is a very important aside. Anyway, getting back to my story. So I had dinner with his father, and it was really appropriate because I made shish kebabs, which he grilled. He hadn't grilled in years. And this was a traditional thing that we used to do like every Memorial Day to open this summer. Actually, we would have shish kebab with the family at his house. And I sat there and I told him that because I was leaving for California and I really had no intention of coming back to Massachusetts. Of course, there's a couple of exceptions. Maybe if I don't find a really good dentist out in California and a few other things out here, maybe with some client cases or something. But generally, I'm not looking at coming back here ever again if I can help it, simply because this place has been so challenging to me for the whole 35 years I've been here, both personally and professionally, health-wise, mental and physical. It's just been really, really hard. So I'm shifting my energy by moving across the country where I've been called to go. Anyway, my soul's been telling me to go there for, I don't know, 32 years or so. So now I have the opportunity to go. So I explained this to him. And I said to him, in the way that Benjamin wanted me to tell him, that he has a really fantastic opportunity because they're going away to visit with Richard's brother's kids, who he doesn't really know. He and his brother don't get along for many very important reasons. And yet he really wants to have connection with his family. And on Facebook, they connect here and there. But there's things that kids are asking him that he can't really put out there on Facebook. So if they want answers, they need to talk to him in person, which is the appropriate way of doing things. So they're going down there to Maryland to go to some baseball games and hang out with these cousins. And his daughter has decided not to go for whatever her reasons were. So this creates an open opportunity for the two of them to really be able to bond in a way they haven't been able to do in a very long time on the airplane ride down and back, especially. However, more important than that is that they need to have conversations before that trip in September. Because until you can have a relationship where one can trust the other, especially a child, a grown-up child especially, can trust their parent to treat them with the love and the respect, which means that they care, they're interested, they're supportive and positive toward what they're doing. Until that happens, the relationship isn't going to go very far. I mean, Benjamin's relationship with his father is about a 3-minute conversation, which has nothing to do with what he's doing in his life really at all personally, and really just has to do with maybe his sister or maybe something his father's concerned with or something like that. But Benjamin never shares anything with his father about anything that's important to him ever. And I brought this up to his father and I asked him why he thought that might be. And he couldn't come up with the answer. And the answer is really easy. It's called trust. I mean, why would you want to open up to somebody if all they're going to do is either sabotage you, make sarcastic commentaries that you might think are funny and not really that, but where the other person takes it as an insult? Well, you're not going to be talking to that person about anything that matters to you because you're getting injured every time you do so. And Benjamin's attitude is, well, I don't really care what he thinks anyway because I would never want the life that he lives, and I've done everything in my power to create a different kind of life for myself, which is appropriate. However, in that, we all want to be loved by our parents. It's very important, and now he doesn't really have a relationship with his mother at all because of choices she's made. So having a relationship with his father is important, especially while he's still living at home with his dad, which he tells me he's going to be moving out soon because his father did him the favor of helping him save a lot of money so he could do so. However, that being stated, maybe time is getting really small now when they're going to be together on a day-to-day basis where they could make these conversations happen. So I spoke to Richard about this opening and I reminded him about my father's death, and Richard actually put an exam that he had on hold. He had like all his midterms for his master's degree program in rehabilitation on hold, telling his professors that he had an emergency with one of his best friends who was like a sister of his and he needed to go to her home and help her out because she was in crisis and really didn't have anyone else close to her outside the family. And because we were so close, that was like really important, something he felt moved to do. And then he called me up and he told me he had done that. And he said to me at that time, this is like 29 years ago now, he said, you know, I'm not asking you if I can come down. I'm telling you I'm coming down. And he didn't tell me about putting off his midterms to make that happen until 2 years later. He didn't want me to know that he did that. He just told me to show up at the Westchester airport and he'd be there for me. And he was in every shape, way, and form. My mom is totally insane for good reasons. She's not the most stable person in the first place. And being widowed at 52 years old, still with a kid at home and a kid in college, it was really hard for her to figure this all out. She felt abandoned, and I guess in some ways she was. However, the bottom line was that he was there. So I reminded him. He said, oh yeah, I remember your mom being kind of crazy when I was down there. I remember that whole thing. I said, well, I cannot imagine that you would. However, there's something else that you need to recognize. And the fact that your older brother died at the age of 50 to a heart attack secondary to diabetes. You have diabetes now. You have another brother who's in really ill health. You're constantly making jokes about the canary still being alive, which would be your twin brother. He has a fraternal twin brother who has myriads of health issues, although he is running a flower business now somehow with his wife. But that being said, Richard's health is not really that good at all. So I don't know what's going to happen with Richard in his future. I really don't know. His dad lived into his 70s, and I don't remember how old his mother was when she passed, but she passed away, I don't know, I think it was 10 years ago now. I don't know, I can't keep it all straight because he lost his father, his mother, and his mother-in-law so far. So anyway, the point is that I really wanted him to understand that he had an opening here to really create a very loving, respectful relationship with his son. If he would be able to just really concentrate on his son, have his phone off or in the other room and just concentrate on what his son is saying, and to ask his son what he needed in order to rebuild the relationship and have it be trusting. Because Richard really does have a heart of gold. The problem is that he's been hurt over and over and over again by people, including myself to some degree, I suppose. But he's also done some pretty horrific things, as far as I'm concerned. Said some pretty bad things, considering how close we were and all the things we've done for one another over the years. And I just got to the point where I just didn't want to be around his negative energy. So I wasn't around his negative energy, and I explained that to him as well. Anyway, I told him that I was talking to him as his sister, because he always said that I was his brother from another mother, and for years and years and years, he signed birthday cards and Christmas cards and get-well cards that he was, you know, or to my chosen sister was actually the way he would write them out, and then he would sign them off from your brother from another mother. So I said, as a sister, I'm talking to him about something that he can easily take care of because his son really wants this taken care of. And then I talked to his son after the call the next day and I explained to him what I had done and how I went about doing it and what his next steps were. And I told him that his father uses his passive-aggressive behavior and decides not to come forward and tell him that he wants to create a better relationship with him and ask him what he needs in order to trust his father to do so, then it would be up to Benjamin to do this for himself. That basically all the ground has been laid. His father knows everything he needs to know about the whole history, what needs to be corrected, the time period that's really important to go over, and how he needs to just express to his father the things he's expressed to me, which I already expressed to his father on his behalf, but it really needs to come from him. And he needs to tell his father what he needs in order to rebuild this relationship, which he said he would do. And this is a really, really good thing because actually, in a few days, his father's turning 54 years old. Understand, again, his older brother died at the age of 50. And I don't really remember how old his mother was when she passed, but it wasn't a very good passing. She died of congestive heart failure, basically. And she had a lot of health issues for many, many years. And I don't even remember how his father died. It might have been a heart attack. I can't even remember. But I do know that it's a small little family now until they get to know the cousins from the brothers. There's 6 in Israel, and there's 5 in Maryland. And then there's all the cousins on the mother's side of the family as well. There's many, many more of them, because she was one of 8 kids. And family is like one of these things that if you actually take the time to realize what you have and what you don't have. So like, for example, I don't get along with 2 of my sisters for very good reasons, and I have chosen to cut them out of my life forever. That's my choice, because they're toxic to me. One's just self-destructive to everything she touches because she's got mental illness and she won't deal with it, and the other one is just very angry and takes a lot of anger out on me, and I just decided the last time she got me upset that that was the end. So those 2 are gone, and I have 2 other sisters that I'm really close to in 2 very different ways, because one is 5 years older and one is 5 years younger. So it's interesting relationships. And that's okay, because we need to make those kinds of discernments as to who we want in our lives, because it's who we have in our lives that's going to dictate how our lives go forth. And frankly, relationships are the one thing that I found were the most important thing in my life when I went away to Israel for 2.5 months. And before that, I was in Australia doing a coaching assist in neurolinguistic programming, and it was really there that I realized that I needed to cut off from the one man who I thought was like a god in the world of NLP, when he really proved to me that he didn't even know how to use his own tools that he, or shall I say techniques, that he had developed to let go of anger. He had so much anger and hostility toward me from 2 years previous, and he had no right to be angry with me because it was he who did not do what he needed to do for me without a big fight. And he is the trainer, so he is held to a higher standard than I am as the trainee. He needed to amp up what he was doing and have something called humility and grace and dignity and respect for what was going on there, and he did not, which was a really great learning for me in terms of how I need to show up for my clients in my trainings as well. So bottom line, I had to let him go, and his wife, who I really do respect a lot, and she was very helpful to me in that training, and certainly my trainer's training in 2007, helping me get the most I could out of that particular training, because she saw something in me that she wanted to see grow when I did a presentation for them at their convention that year. That was in 2007. Then I left there, and I went to Israel, and this one gentleman, Bill Fern, who sent me over there, he's a very distant cousin of mine. He had done a genealogy, which is how I found him, and I became really friendly with him. Well, I wasn't really that friendly with him, but I wanted to get to know him. He was one of these people who had really great energy, and he has charisma in a very soft-spoken kind of way. He's a genteel gentleman. He was 79 when he gave me the money to go to Israel. He's 84 now, and I just saw him. And the thing that he always said to me, and this is like really important for you guys, anyone who's listening to this podcast, you need to hear this. It was he who taught me what love truly is. Because I thought it had to do with friendship, trust, common interest, chemistry, those kinds of things. And yes, they have everything to do with what is love. However, what true love is this. His refrain to me from the time before he sent me, when he felt moved to send me to Israel so I could have the change I needed, to the time I saw him just this past Tuesday, when he was asking me to please keep them, meaning him, his office, his partner, in the know as to what I was doing out in California, because we care and we're interested. You see, if you care about another person, you show it by the actions you take. You're there when they need you. They're there when you need them. And they're interested in the things that you are doing in your life. They care and they're interested. As much as I loved my ex and I was totally involved and interested in his artwork, and I can't tell you what a gifted artist he is, because he truly is one of the most gifted artists I've ever met in my entire life, and one of the most gifted artists of all the things I've ever seen in all the museums that I've gone to, all the art openings, everything. He did so much art stuff when I was with him, because he was in school for 12 of the 13 years. He was getting his Bachelor's of Fine Arts. That I recognized how very, very gifted the man is. He needs to get his art out there in the museums, the big museums, because his artwork is more meaningful than 90% of the crap that you see on the walls in there. And that's not to say that there's not some excellent art out there. What it is to say is that there's a lot of junk out there, and he belongs among the best. Well, anyway, getting back to this whole thing, he never really cared or was very interested in what I was doing once I found my hypnosis. He did respect that I was caring for people, and I introduced him to some of the elders that I took care of that lived really close by to us who were lonely on Sundays, and made breakfast for the two of them. There were a few of them that were really special in my life, so I wanted them to meet Bob because I was always talking about Bob, and they were always sending me gifts for Bob. You'd think they'd give me gifts for me, but no, they didn't. They sent gifts for Bob. I'm not kidding. They really did. And I gave them to him because they were gifts for him. Well, Bill Fern taught me what true love is. It's caring and being interested in letting someone know from the bottom of your heart how much they mean to you, how much they inspire you, how much you admire them, how much, as he put it to me, his investment. The man invested $15,000 in my trip to Israel so I could come into my own after I was diagnosed with a brain tumor and got treatment. He felt horrible for me. I was 47 years old. He was 79 at the time. And he didn't even remember that when I saw him on Tuesday. So that was the reason he sent me to Israel in the first place, because I had gone there to tell him about my brain tumor. Because I wouldn't tell anyone that over the phone, only in person. So I had to drive to Connecticut and let him know. I made a special meeting with him. And one of the things that I did most recently, and it wasn't even my idea, I can't take credit for it, but this woman, Donna Novi, who I wrote the book Wake Up Doc with, it was really based on her very serious and complex medical and psychological history of our work together and her work with other medical and psych professionals and all the stuff she's been through. It's been a horrific story, and she's still battling stuff, so we have to update the book. But Donna actually had suggested to me, because she knows how much I love the man and how much I miss him, because I'm here in Boston. He's either down there in Westport, Connecticut, or Florida, and he travels a lot. Well, less or so now, I suppose, but he was traveling a lot, that I ought to write him a letter, and I'll send him a happy Father's Day card, because he's like a father to me. And I said, you know, that's a really great idea, but I don't really know how to go about doing it. But it took me about, I don't know, 20 minutes to figure out how I wanted to construct this letter, because, you know, Bill Fern doesn't have any kids, so he's like a non-father father, if you will. And I never really thought anyone could really, you know, fit into the shoes that my father had. He wasn't perfect, but he was one of the best fathers that I know ever existed for many different reasons. And it was really Bill Fern's concern for me in telling me that I really needed to not have involvement with my mom anymore or with my older sister, the one I cut off from, because they were really damaging to me. And I had just come back from Israel, and I had to go get my mom out of a really horrible situation, because no one else believed her, but I did because of my work in mental health. And so he told me I had done what I had to do and that I need to let these people go, even though they were family. And he did it in a very assertive yet loving way. And he sounded like the same tonality my dad would have used if he had been alive. And that's when he earned the role of being a father figure to me. Because as great as the trip to Israel was, and how great as the money was to get me over there, and the freedom to just leave my practice and just concentrate on my own health and healing, which is what I really did. It was like a pilgrimage that I was taking. I was able to meet my cousins over there, one of whom died a couple years later. Found that out through an email he had sent the night before I left to go to Nairobi to work with a young boy who was full of suicidal ideation. His parents didn't recognize it. They just knew he was having a really hard time. He was full of anger and upset, and they didn't know how to handle it. I met them, actually, in Colorado, of all places. And I ended up in Nairobi working, doing family therapy with them. And, yes, he's doing fine now, thank God. But the bottom line was that it was through this true care and interest coming from the heart and the soul of this fabulously old-fashioned man in the right way of being old-fashioned and being able to hear what people need and what they want. And Donna having me write that letter to him, he told me when I saw him on Tuesday that that letter changed his life, because I explained to him why it was that he filled those shoes different than maybe what Richard was doing for the many years that I needed someone to kind of take care of me in a way. I mean, for years what Richard did was really fine, but then there came a point when I had sort of outgrown a sort of older brotherly, fatherly kind of thing with him and just needed him just to be a friend or a really good person to hang with and have fun with, because he can be goofy and fun. Bill made it really clear that what he wanted to do was invest the substantial finances that he had to give people those things that they needed in order to be their best selves. And when he sees them learn and grow and come into that which they can come into, and in my case, I really do help people save their lives and create lives that are more than just being robots doing a day-to-day life. My whole mission is to set souls free, to live their purpose on purpose. My new mission is heal the healers, heal the world, heal the children, heal the world. And that's what I'm going to be doing going forward in a really big way with all this information and knowledge that I've gained and the ability to get my life back on track thanks to people like Bill Firm who understood what I had to offer the world and what I needed in order to get back on track, not once but twice. And Richard for being there when the family wasn't, and for Benjamin for wanting a relationship with me after he did his high school college thing. He's really gone out of his way to be with me and to make me a priority in his life. And the reason that he did that was, number one, he knew that I knew the whole family history. Number two, he trusts me. And number three, he knows that I'm the bridge to his father, even though I didn't have a lot to do with his father over the past couple of years. But he's rebuilt that relationship because he really cares about his father and wants his father to have a really excellent friend in his life that he knows he can trust and respect. And that was Benjamin's thing. So it's kind of an interesting little circle there. So I know this has been kind of all over the place, and that's okay, because the bottom line is that it's all about letting people know that you care and that they matter to you. And even if you have times when you need to take space, like I did with Richard, and like Benjamin needed to do with me to do his growing up stuff with his friends and stuff, these are things are okay. Because when you do things with a pure heart and a pure soul, as Bill Firm and Richard and I and Benjamin have done for ourselves and Donna as well, let me tell you, amazing, amazing things happen. It is your connection to your world. It is your connection to those things that truly matter. Because you can have all the money in the world and you can invest like Bill does to help people do things and feel good about themselves and create wonderful things and opportunities in this world. However, most people who have money have no idea how to employ it that brilliantly. He was a teacher, so he learned about what matters for people. And he's always remembered that. He's always been a teacher. Always will be. The whole genealogy thing is all about teaching and bringing people together who wouldn't know that they were related otherwise, which is beautiful in and of itself. We have members of the family who are the only members of their family who survived the Holocaust, and all of a sudden they finally have all these family members all over the place, and in one case, it was one person who lost everyone in the Holocaust, when I think the kid was like 10 years old at the time. He's now all grown up, obviously. He's an old man. And he was able to make connections with people in his family that he didn't even know existed, thanks to Bill Firm. And that person called, crying on the phone, being so touched to finally, after all these decades, find family. Well, a lot of my family are my excellent friends all over the world who really care about me and really believe in me and won't let me quit doing hypnosis even when it gets frustrating sometimes. I mean, my bookkeeper, she's now she does bookkeeping, but she's also an acupuncturist thanks to the work that we've done together. We started as a barter, she doing my bookkeeping and me doing hypnosis for her. And she yelled at me, and she doesn't yell at me, okay? But she got really serious and really angry with me, and she told me, and I told her I couldn't do this anymore because I couldn't make a living out here on the East Coast. It was just too hard, even with everything I know, everything I've done, all the products I created, everything I've opened up to people. It was just too hard. And she looked at me straight in the eyes and she said to me, "Don't you ever say that to me again. Ever. You have saved so many lives. You've helped out so many sex addicts. I don't know anyone who does that, but you do. You get them back with their families where they belong. You help people to have healthy relationships. This is what you need to be doing, and that's what you're always going to be doing. So don't ever, ever say that to me again." What do you say to someone who says that to you? Especially someone who waits months to get paid sometimes. Even when she has her own financial struggles. What do you do? I'll tell you what you do. You suck it up, and you say, "Thank God there's someone out there who actually gives a shit. Not about me personally, but about what I bring to the world. The people who I'm able to touch and find their worthiness, and find their ability to find love and attachment in healthy ways, and to create lives that are worth living. Because to have a life that is worth living means to have a life doing things that bring you joy and happiness, peace and calm, and fulfillment. And that's what I've dedicated my life to do. And it's not even me. I don't even know how I know all this stuff. I know I really have no clue. I mean, yeah, I studied a lot of hypnotism. I studied psychology. I've gone through my own process. My mother taught me a lot through her own mental health issues through all my years of growing up. And yet, it's really the Creator doing His work through me. He's a channel for my work. As I was explaining to a CEO that I've worked with, she actually paid for the trip for me to go to Uganda with her husband to go create some wonderful non-pharmaceutical pain control methods for people who are having, well, women who are having babies or having to undergo breast biopsies. She's an amazing person. She told me that her idea of getting defibrillators in airliners in airports saves approximately 2 people a day. Just that idea of doing that through the company she was CEO of. And I had to remind her. I mean, I just did this yesterday. We were doing hypnosis. She's a very religious person in terms of believing that Jesus is really directing her life and is helping her to see what she needs to do in order to use her gifts and talents to save lives. It's all about saving lives. That's why she sent me and her husband over to Uganda, along with his sister, so the 3 of us could make change and really help these people out who live on less than $1 a day. And they were so grateful. I can't tell you. All I want to do is go back to Africa and help more of these people. They're fabulous. They just wanted more and more information from us over here in the West so they could help their peoples over there. So I reminded her of this. And then we got her in touch with what she wanted her next job as CEO to be, and what she realized was she didn't want to have a boss. She doesn't need a freaking boss. She's a visionary. She makes amazing things happen. She's like a trailblazer in her own area of creating medical devices. She's amazing. Totally amazing. She's done so many things. I had her read her resume to me. I mean, I was blown away by the things that this woman has been able to do. And yet, you know, she was let go because she was too good. But in being let go, she's also found her own freedom. And that's what she needed to understand. She needed to learn that she was bigger than the people who were her bosses. She needed to understand that she could create a position that would work perfectly for her, where she'd have enough money, you know, that the company would have enough money so she could make these visions of hers come true, where she would be able to have a board of directors above her, and that's it. And then whatever she says goes for all the rest of the employees. But have it be small enough so that she can do the things that she wants to do, to have it be maneuverable, and to be able to be with her family, and to take care of her own health and well-being. And these are very important things for you all to understand, too, because if you're going to have a relationship with people, you need to be healthy, you need to have the time. She was traveling all over the place. She was never home. She was gone like 3 to 6 weeks at a time. Although when she was home, she was taking karate with her daughter and doing things with her family. But she always had to cut it short because she had to be on the road again. So less travel is one of those things that she wants to do. If there's a good reason for it, she's willing to do the travel, but otherwise she's not willing to. And that's for sales and marketing and keeping the team motivated. But other than that, she's not interested. But she had to figure this all out because what's most important to her is saving lives and her family. That's what's important to her. So now they're coming to the front. See how this all comes together? So please, 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 tell those people you love the hard things they need to hear. Do it in a respectful manner in the way that works best for the people who are asking you to act in their own orientation, like Benjamin did with his father, because he knew his father wouldn't listen to him until I got to him first. And that's absolutely true, because his father never listens to him. He just condemns him. So, and his father doesn't even realize he does that. He doesn't. He just learned it from his parents. So I had to bring that to his father's knowledge base. I've done it over the years, but I just did it this one last time because, you know, I'm going to California and I'm not going to be here to play this interference game anymore, so they're going to have to be adults and deal with this, which is another opportunity. So, relationships, letting people know how much you care about them, letting them know you care, letting them know that they're valuable to you because of who they are, that they inspire you, that you admire them. Tell them how they inspire you. Tell them why you admire them. Tell them the things that are necessary for them to know that you matter to them. in ways that you never knew before they told you those things. In fact, whenever people tell me that I inspire them or they admire me, I always ask them to tell me how specifically. Because I want to know how specifically. I want to know what I'm doing right in my life. Because God knows I've done a lot of really screwed up things in my life. Oh my God. Horrible, horrible things. And yet, I've done some truly amazing things too, with a whole lot of challenges throughout my entire life. And that is really what inspires a lot of people. I never let anything get in my way. My youngest sister, when she found out I had the brain tumor, told me basically that she knew I'd be okay, because I'm always okay. Go figure. My ex-friend told me I always landed on my feet. Because I do. We don't know how I do. I just do. So, bottom line, a lot of it has to do with the fact that I have really good relationships with people who really give a damn about what it is that I'm here to do, and they make sure that I'm able to do it even when I don't have the income nor the money in my bank to make it happen. They give me what I need, so it happens. And that's it. That's the way it works. Because what I do with my life is way more important than anything else to them. So they help me do the things in the way that they can help me do it. And it's different for everybody. Bill's a millionaire. He can give me money. Other people give me loans. Other people wait for payment. Other people give me ideas in ways that I can get things done. It's amazing what people are willing to do. I get free trainings from people and I can't pay for them, and they know it's going to make a really big difference for me in terms of getting my work out in the world. I ask and I get things, but I build up things by knowing what's in it for them first, and I go from there. What Bill Fern needed was he needed recipes for his new recipe book, and he needed to know that the work that I did saved lives. So I had him read a couple testimonials when I went down to meet him before I told him about the brain tumor and the fear I had that I wouldn't have my mind about me, because I had double vision that allowed me to know that the brain tumor is there. Thank God at least I had an understanding so we could get it treated. And no, I don't think there's any brain tumor there. I visualized it away after I got treatments for it to stop the growth. Because being a hypnotist, you learn certain things. And if you're smart, you'll apply it to yourself first. So it took me a while to put that together, but I did. And the last time I went in was 3 years ago. And basically the doctor told me that that it was so small that it was almost as if there was nothing there. So there you go. Apply to self, then apply to others. Very simple. So, who are going to let know in your life that they matter to you, that you care and that you're interested in what they're doing and who they are as people, to demonstrate your respect and love for them, and to be present when you talk to them, have your damn cell phones off, and better yet, out of the room or far away from you, so you can have a constructive, loving, caring conversation with these people face to face. So you can see the nonverbal cues, because that's what actually tells you the reality of what's going on in their mind, regardless of what they say. And just be present and care enough to be present. Let me know how this works for you going forward. I'm always interested to hear from my listeners. And you may do that at suzanne@dawningvisions.com. At this time, I would love to introduce you to a fantastic woman whose purpose is to inspire and empower others to be of service to humanity in a loving and caring manner while achieving their aspirations with integrity. Her name is Alicia Lawrence, and she has a podcast called I Live to Inspire. She also has a weblog where you can read the content. She says that everyone has their own definition of success and freedom, and she is moved to inspire you to get there by sharing her journey with you, called The Alicia Lawrence Show, I Live to Inspire, which you can easily find on Stitcher.com and iTunes. You love her warm, comforting Jamaican voice. If you'd prefer to read the content, go to her website at http://ilivetoinspire.com/podcast/. You will truly enjoy and learn much from what she shares with you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, Claim Your Excellent Life, with your host, Suzanne Kellner-Zink, where she helps professional women learn how to be happy. Suzanne teaches you how to do this through building high self-esteem, relaxation and calm, and good, healthy relationships. Tune in every week as Suzanne shares effective strategies to help you claim your excellent life with happiness techniques, self-esteem building exercises, relationship tips, and relaxation information. Make sure to head over to dawningvisions.com to subscribe to the newsletter to receive your Keys to Happiness, as well as other useful free gifts for you.